Hey, everyone, and welcome to the All It Takes is a Goal podcast, the best place in the entire world, including all of Canada, to learn how to build new thoughts, new actions, and new results. I'm your host, John Acuff, and today we're talking about the best way to deal with your inner critic. Do you have an inner critic, that negative voice that gets loud sometimes? Me too. I have the same thing you have, and there's something I've learned that's completely changed how I view my inner critic. I'm going to share about that today, but first, a quick word from the sponsor of today's episode. Quick question. What if you could guarantee the success of your goals? No, seriously. The book you want to write? Guaranteed. The business you want to start? Guaranteed. The exercise plan you want to stick with? Guaranteed. What if no goal was off limits? It's possible with the Guaranteed Goals Community. The Guaranteed Goals Community is my first ever membership program where you'll find the courage, connection, and most importantly, the community you need to win all your goals. Ever since I started hosting online challenges with tens of thousands of people from around the world, the number one request people sent me was for a private, non-Facebook community where we can all work on our goals together. That's why I created the Guaranteed Goals Community on a user-friendly platform where you won't be overwhelmed with endless dance videos, silly reels, and dog memes. Inside this community, in addition to learning my fail-proof formula for achieving goals, you'll get access to a massive course library, check-ins with my team for accountability, the chance to win awesome prizes, 12 VIP Q&A sessions with me, the ability to team up with other members who are working on similar goals as you, and so much more. A year from now, I want you to be thankful for the way you invested in yourself and your goals today. Join me at acuff.me/goals. That's acuff.me/goals. I'll see you there. All right. I thought it would be fun to do a 30-second summary of this episode. I'm calling it the 30-second version for wicked busy people. So now that we've heard the ad, now that we're about to get into the episode, if you're like right now, if you're like, I got 30 seconds, I need a 30-second version of this podcast, I've got you. I got you. Don't worry about it. Here it is. Here's the 30-second summary of it. I need my inner critic. I just don't need him all the time. He's terrible at the start of projects. He's the worst at brainstorming, for instance, but he's so great at checking the final details when the project is almost done. Don't fight him. Just invite him to the right parts of your life. That's the trick. All right. About 30 seconds, even shorter than 30 seconds. So it's very fast. Okay. Now let's jump into the full episode. Here's how the full episode starts. It starts with a ridiculous statement. Here it is. I don't think birds have inner critics. I really don't. I don't think blue jays, for instance, ever sit on a tree limb thinking, what am I even doing with my life? Like, I thought by now I'd be further along as a bird. I just had expectations of how life was going to go, and I haven't met them. Oh, I'm never going to find a job I love. Like, oh, I'm so sick of building nests. That nest I made was so sloppy. The cardinal next door really has it all together. Why can't I find someone to be happy with, like those two mourning doves? I don't think birds ever say that. I think humans are the only species who have inner critics. My inner critic, like my personal inner critic, is loud, creative, and the worst part, perhaps, equipped with the greatest memory of all time. He's able to reach like way back into the recesses of my life and dredge up mistakes I made in the eighth grade. He'll say things like, hey, remember that time you lost your science notebook in Mrs. Murtaugh's class, which was 70% of your grade, and your mom had to drive you all over town begging friends to borrow their printouts of the human heart, and you had to photocopy them at Rite Aid, and the cashier, Vinny Gonzalez, told you it was illegal to copy someone's homework? Do you remember that? My inner critic asks, and I'll say, I do now. And what's wild is I can't name some of the streets that are four streets away from my house. Like, I have no sense of what the names of those streets are, but I remember it was Vinny Gonzalez at Rite Aid in like 1987 who said you can't use the photocopier to copy homework. That's illegal. That's not helpful information. The roads around my house, way more helpful, but my inner critic doesn't care. Now, I wrote a book called Soundtracks that talks about mindset. And people asked me, what was the most surprising thing I learned, personally, that I learned during the writing process? And my answer was always the same. I was shocked how many of my internal thoughts ended with, you idiot. Like, a thought would be like, you need to do this, da-da-da-da-da, you idiot. I call it checking my punctuation. I think everyone listening to this right now, it's a super simple exercise. Just check your punctuation. The sentences you're using in your head to yourself, how are you punctuating them? And I'll be real with you. I didn't say you idiot. Like I was way more intense than that. I'm cleaning this up. I'm keeping this TBS edited for television for you. The deeper I got into the mindset and like working on it, research, all the stuff, writing about it, the more surprised I was how negative my inner critic was. A short way to say it is, when I talk to me, I talk mean. When I talk to me, I talk mean. Recognizing that, and maybe you've recognized that in your own life. Like, have you ever been there? Like, you catch yourself talking mean to yourself and you're like, well, that's not cool. Like, what is that about? Like, when I talk to me, I talk mean. Recognizing that, I did what most people do when they identify an inner critic, right? I tried to kill it. That's what we do. I tried to ignore it. I went to war with it. I hoped that if I could just beat it back, like beat it back to whatever dark corner it came from, then I'd be okay. Now, for years, I read books, blogs, and Instagram posts that promised me it was possible to quiet your inner critic. I bet I have 10 on my shelf from where I'm sitting right now that I could go book, 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 book about the inner critic. And here's what was most frustrating about all of that. None of it worked. None of it worked. My inner critic kept coming back. It kept piping up. It kept getting loud. And then one day I had a bit of an epiphany. It was this burst of insight found me in the middle of a run. That's often what happens. Like when I'm running, I don't know if it's that like fear is afraid of endorphins, but like when I'm running, I'll often have a thought that comes out of nowhere and occasionally they're helpful. And this one was, here's what I realized in the middle of a run about my inner critic. I need my inner critic. I just don't need him all the time. Like I need my inner critic. I just need him in the right moments. What would happen? This is the question that kind of sent me down this path. What would happen if instead of trying to kill him, I just started inviting him to the times I need him the most? What if? You see, I don't need him at the start of projects, for instance. When I'm trying to dream up something new, the inner critic's advice is not helpful. If I'm trying to blue sky some new adventure, whether it's planning a family vacation, writing a book, or coming up with a new exercise program, the inner critic's words are destructive. He's terrible at dreaming. He has incredible vision for the smallest possible mistakes and disasters that could happen with any project. But my inner critic's level of detail is invaluable in other moments of my life. That's what I never realized. Like, for instance, when I'm about to turn in a final manuscript to my publisher, I need his eyes. I do. He's amazing at pointing out mistakes. He's so detailed in so many different ways. I need him checking for typos, redundant phrases, and lazy sentences where I've clearly phoned it in because I was tired. That's why I tell writers all the time, writing and editing are two completely different processes. You can't do the same thing at the same time. They're different parts of your brain. One is more mathematical, one is more artistic. I need that inner critic when I'm about to turn something in because that's when I need to be analytical. That's when I need to be detailed. That's when I need him going, no, that's not right. No, are you sure? Like, are you sure that's how you spell that? Also, like when I'm reviewing my monthly expenses and my gross revenue for my business, I don't need the dreamer side of me. I don't need the creative part of me with his head in the clouds saying, anything is possible if we just believe. If we believe enough, like share, anything is possible. In that moment, I need the inner critic to say, whoa, pump the brakes. What's this number right here? We spent how much on what? For real? I need his cold, analytical, take no excuses attitude to interview every single one of the numbers on my P&L. I need my inner critic. I just need him in the right moments. Now, I can't take credit for this epiphany because like a lot of things in my life, it's connected to a lesson I learned years ago. Here's the lesson I learned. Don't invite the wrong people to your meetings. The best definition I've ever heard in my life is from author Dorothy Parker. She wrote this in the 60s. She said, creativity is a wild mind and a disciplined eye. Oh, it's so good. Let me say it again. Creativity is a wild mind and a disciplined eye. The wild mind means you give yourself permission to put 1,000 different ideas in your head. You notice a song lyric, a comment from the mailman, a sign at a coffee shop, a question your curious toddler asked, and an article in the New York Times. You collect anything that is remotely interesting to you. And then you look at that vast collection of unrelated ideas and have the discipline to see the connection between them in a way no one else has before. I use this approach to write books, articles, speeches, podcasts. That's what happened with my idea about the inner critic. A bunch of old ideas bounced around in the rock tumbler that is my brain until I finally found a shiny new idea. Like, it bounced around for a while and then a new idea emerged. So when I was thinking about this with the podcast, a tweet came out of that. Like, that was another thing that kind of bounced around because I thought about rock tumblers. And so I was like, oh, I think I have a joke about rock tumblers that I haven't done. Like, this silly thing that I can say about rock tumblers. Here's what I sent. I said this a couple weeks ago. This was like mid-May that I said this. Huge congratulations to every kid who got a rock tumbler last Christmas. Mid-May is usually when the first rock you put in is finished tumbling. Today is a fun day. And I said that because it's true. Like, I remember as a kid being like, man, it felt like a cheat code. Like, if I could get a rock tumbler, if these sucker adults would buy me a rock tumbler, I could make my own gems, my own diamonds probably. Like, oh my, like, that and the Snoopy, they had a Snoopy shaved ice thing, or the Easy Bake Oven. All of them felt like the greatest life hacks or life cheats were like, wait, adults are giving me the ability to make my own shaved ice? Like, whenever, like, what? I control the shaved ice. I control rock tumblers. So I've got this view of my brain where I'm putting in a bunch of different ideas and they're tumbling all around, and then a shiny one emerges. So how did this idea about inner critic start? Well, 15 years ago, I used to help an event planning company brainstorm their programming. They'd hire me as a freelancer to come in like an idea SWAT team and give them 50 fresh concepts for their Christmas performance. That's actually something that I did for years and years and years, where a company would say, hey, you're an idea machine, come to this meeting, give us 50 ideas, give us 100 ideas, and then bounce. And I loved it. I'd swing in on like a rope and be like, what if we tried this? What if we did this? What if we did this? Like, I have a very active brain, as they say, a very active brain. And so I'd come in, give them 100 ideas, and then I'd bounce. And so I used to do this for this event planning company. And I learned in my first team meeting that the program director was very intentional about who she invited to the initial meetings. And what do I mean by that? I mean, she didn't invite any of the production crew. Why? Because they had a hard time dreaming. And the reason why is very simple. It wasn't that they weren't creative. They were incredibly creative. It was just that they had to build the wild designs we came up with. So they could only see the reasons none of them would work. So we would say, what if we made it snow inside? And they would say, ooh, I don't know. The liquid soap we'd have to use might harm our electrical equipment. And fog machines, oh, remember that time we had the fog machine 9 months ago? Set off the fire alarm, no more fog machines. So then we'd go, okay, what if we got live reindeer? And they'd go, ooh, dealing with animals on stage with the lights and the sound, like they spook very easily. It'd be a huge complication. We can't do live reindeer. And then we'd say, what if we built like a 3D LED screen that was programmed to change subtly during each speaker's performance? And they'd say, ooh, those are beautiful. They're beautiful. We just don't have the budget for that. You run the numbers on that? It's crazy. They couldn't help but shut down ideas before they even had a chance to mature a bit, because they were like real life inner critics. But they were also incredibly valuable members of the team, just not in that moment. We needed them in the production meetings, not the brainstorming meetings. Julie, the woman in charge, stopped inviting them to the conceptual stage of the projects and started letting them give feedback during the production stage. And they shined. They did. They had this insightful, detailed approach to turning dreams into reality that was priceless. By putting them in the right part of the process, their feedback changed from criticism to preparation. They weren't trying to snatch our dreams. They were trying to complete our projects. So here's your choice. Like, you've got a choice. You can fight your inner critic. You can. And maybe you've already done that. Like, you can keep fighting, keep fighting, keep fighting, keep fighting. You can try to shut it up. Maybe there's some type of yoga or candle that makes them go away forever. I haven't found it yet, but if you do, by all means, slide into my DMs. In the meantime, though, I think you might be surprised what would happen if you befriended your inner critic, if you established some ground rules and invited him to the right part of your life. You see, inner critics aren't loud because they hate you. They're loud because they're afraid you're going to ignore them. They're loud because they have something to tell you. They're loud because they're worried they won't have a seat at the table. So try this. Tell them they will. Tell them there's a specific spot for them. Tell them you'll listen during the review stage. And then watch what happens when hurt changes to help. Now, here's what you need to know. Every successful goal, this is the All It Takes a Goal podcast, has four stages. Number one, dream. Number two, plan. Number three, do. And number four, review. What we talked about today was invite your inner critic to the review stage, not the dream stage, the review stage to get the most out of your inner critic. And if you're curious about learning how to have fun in all four stages and accomplish the goals you care about the most, check out the Guaranteed Goals community at acup.me/goals. Thank you for listening to today's episode. I really appreciate it. We'll put all of the show notes together as always, any links that we mentioned, and thank you for reviewing my podcast. Here's one from Overcoming Kim. I love that name, by the way, Overcoming Kim. Well done. She says, wow and wow, challenging my thinking. All It Takes a Goal is brilliant. Thank you, John Acuff, for thoughtful, humble, humorous, and uplifting content. You are a gifted storyteller and insightful friend to humans. I am a friend to humans. I'm also a friend to dogs. Big dog guy. It's weird that how often I notice somebody new to the neighborhood based on whether or not I know their dog. I'll be like, I don't know that boxer. Or I don't know that. Why would I even pretend it's a boxer? It's a doodle. It's a variety of doodle. I don't even know if they make other dogs right now. Do you think they made? Did they stop? Is it possible they just stopped making other dogs and it's just like the doodle is so dominant? Like the doodle is like, I don't know, the Nike of dogs right now. And just they just got a real dominance going on. Everybody owns a doodle. I don't know. Maybe Overcoming Kim owns a doodle. But I don't know that. I do know she wrote a nice compliment. So, Kim, thank you for reviewing the podcast. Please keep those coming. Make sure you follow or subscribe or whatever the kids are saying these days so you don't miss another episode. I'll see you next week. And remember, all it takes is a goal.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast and to get access to today's show notes and exclusive content from John Acuff, visit acuff.me/podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast.